Yeah, I mean, you can see it as, you know, we're not afraid to let our human side show, which I think is, like, really refreshing. I mean, if you look at a lot of the more traditional corporations out there.
A2 Hosting offers solutions for WordPress and WooCommerce that are both blazing fast and ultra-reliable. WordPress can be used on any web hosting plan from A2. You can deploy WordPress easily on shared, VPS, or dedicated hosting plans. A2 also offers managed WordPress and WooCommerce hosting. Take a look at a2hosting.com today. Hey, Eric, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Not bad. Another week coming down to a close and assembling the stories that matter. We want to get into our often jam-packed newsletter and thinking about WordCamp coming up, and I think everyone's getting geared up for that. So what's on the top of your mind this week? We wanted to kind of run through the top three news stories of the commentary, issues, questions in the WordPress space that matter to you, and I've got a few too.
I think the biggest thing that came out to me is that the whole WebP support in WordPress 6.1 is kind of being reconsidered at the moment. Thought that was a lot of community pushback on how they were going to implement it, and kind of nice to see the leadership in, you know, the developers take a step back and kind of think things through again.
Right. Yeah, that's gone back and forth quite a bit. I got a little lost keeping up, and like you and your earlier writing about it, I think a lot of us feel, boy, that would turning that on by default is not something we like. There should be an option, or at least I don't know. I could see putting in a default for new installs or something like that. But to suddenly switch potentially everyone over from JPEGs or whatever, isn't that the main sticking point?
Yeah, basically it would take what was being proposed was that if you uploaded a JPEG or a PNG file or whatever, WordPress would automatically convert it to a WebP and use it. And so there's, you know, talk about, well, that takes up a lot of server resources. WebP isn't supported in every browser. There's like specific versions of Safari that are a few years old that don't, you know, support it yet. And just all the files that it's going to create, because, you know, WordPress creates 3 or 4 versions of every image you upload. And if it's doing that, again, for WebP versions, you know, some folks on cheaper hosting accounts could run out of space. Right. And then there's the whole idea of, you know, WordPress is all about controlling your content and controlling your process. And to me, that's kind of the oddity of it. It's like, well, they're going to force you to use this format that, by the way, Google created, and, you know, not everybody wants to use it. I think, you know, having a checkbox makes a lot of sense.
Right. Yeah, there's, I was looking at working on towards editing on the Web Almanac, which a number of WordPress people contribute to each year for CMS section of that. And their data set where they compile, run a bunch of queries on a test population and, you know, see how many are using WordPress, and Elementor stands out too. And, you know, WordPress is just way, the numbers are way out there. And you start to think about the dramatic impact it would have with switching a format to, you know, suddenly becoming very heavily used, like WebP, which I've kind of been in favor of from a sustainability perspective, because, and performance, it's generally faster and is going to use less bandwidth and less storage. But if you duplicate, you still have all those old JPEGs and you duplicate that, and yeah, you're really adding a lot in that respect. It's not saving the planet, and particularly well. But I haven't seen that side of the discussion come up on it. But I know there are people who care about just how much we've got in the cloud that's just junk, and it's taking costing electrons power every day. So it'll be interesting to see how that gets sorted out. I'm sure more efficient formats are where we're headed. So my number one pick is not really something that's been tackled yet. I'm sure people are starting to write. I have to let things settle and think about it a bit, but there's a big running discussion that started in two threads in post-status Slack about piracy or unethical behavior with cloning, GPL clubs that get hold of a commercial license and crack WordPress plugins and so on, and then resell this cheaply. That's always been a thing. I think I remember that going on in Joomla. We all know the reasons why that's a bad idea, hurts people's businesses. There's often malware that comes along as a payload with your free, cheap, cracked software. But this, at the same time, one of the big culprits here was adding in some new product that is sort of specialized at a niche, and it's not cheap plugins or some quite high-end things targeted at hosts. So it can be really devastating to some people's business model if it was costing them their target audience. Some people feel actually you shouldn't worry about this because the only people using it are kids or people who aren't your customers anyway. But this one particular pirated GPL club wares archives spammed a ton of people, including people who are in the middle of this discussion. Just at that moment, got a lot of Twitter DMs and other things straight at people who totally don't want this going on. So Ali Niman suggested, well, you know, one way we can combat this is go at the host and say they're spamming. There's been some discussion of what could we do collectively to fight back and protect the ecosystem. Have you taken a look at those discussions or seen this come up in the past and have thoughts on it?
Yeah, there have been a number of cases over the years where people's plugins have been forked and stolen and, you know, resold. I wonder how many of those plugins are actually in production, especially on high level sites. I mean, if you are a web designer who is, you know, partaking in something like that, clients may have these things on their sites and not know it. I wouldn't think there's a huge number, but yeah, I think Ali's, suggestion of going after hosting is a good one. I think maybe it could go after payment gateways too. Mm-hmm. I know, like, especially PayPal has been rough on anyone who's doing anything sketchy over the years. You know, if that gets reported, they may get their payment gateway shut down, which, you know, could kind of cripple their ability to redistribute this stuff. But yeah, I mean, I do think WordPress leadership should speak out on it. You know, I know that's, I mean, it's not just a WordPress issue, it's the software issue, it's an open source issue. But, you know, just some sort of statement, you know, maybe even at WordCamp US about, you know, let's protect this ecosystem. Let's make sure that, you know, everybody's playing by the rules, and that we, you know, if we find someone who's not, we should, you know, make everyone aware of it.
Yeah, exactly. I've often thought, man, I wish there was some advocacy. I wish we had like a nonprofit or some collective where we supported advocacy for open source to both educate people who know nothing about it, the consumers and everyone else, and just show, hey, look, this is a professional space where people are making a living from small freelancers, solo people who've been at it a long time, basically family businesses, all the way up to in the bigger companies that are heavily used by everyone else. It's a big family, and they're real people here. And if you support these products, it's hurting us. So there's kind of that tending the collective governance of an industry as a commons like this, an open source one. There should be things that outside of the project, even that people in the WordPress business can do, that would kind of be on the list of Eleanor Ostrom's things that healthy ecosystems, healthy commons do to protect themselves, where you find the bad actors and find ways to suppress and discourage that. And sometimes if they're internal to the community, you want to, you know, not completely demonize them, but give some kind of carrots and sticks so that there's incentives to come back and be a good contributor. And, you know, some straight anger, rage on the internet is just adding to useless, stressful stuff. Maybe there's a win in this and on the advocacy and education side. But I also threw out the idea that since the WordPress Foundation does legal defense of the WordPress trademark, this is like one step away. Suppose you had good citizens who are doing Five for the Future, and they don't have quite the means to individually defend themselves in the same way. Are there ways we could pull together and help each other through the foundation or something like that?
Yeah, you would think there could at least be some sort of guide to steps you can take. You know, yeah. I know they have lawyers working on their side, as you said, to protect trademarks and things like that. You know, even if it's just general advice to come out and say, hey, your plugin has been selling on the black market. Here's what you can do. Here's some resources. It would, you know, seem like at least a basic way to help.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of a black eye for the for any business ecosystem, people looking to get into it. It may not understand quite what's going on, but if it looks like you're laying down to predators who have gotten entrenched, it's not a good sign for the healthiness of the ecosystem. And it would definitely be good for morale to have some clear boundaries defined and say, like, this is not okay in our world, and we're not going to support this in any way, and find what we can do to limit it. I wrote about this a few weeks ago because Freemius had on their blog a pretty long post about dealing with this. And we've done this before, people getting courseware stolen. It can be content. There can be all kinds of things getting ripped off. When you may or may not have any intellectual property rights over it, if it's GPL stuff, some is, some isn't. But they actually had some interesting case studies or people who didn't fly off the handle. They would get ultimately, you're getting support requests from people who have this pirated stuff, and sometimes they don't know what they've done or what situation they're in. And someone had found that it was kind of a teachable moment where they could educate and convert some of these people into customers and say, like, oh, okay, we're not going to give you support until you're actually our customer. And some people just needed that. They just needed the education, I guess. So there is some win possible there. All right. Well, what's your next pick?
Okay. Well, I have to go with the little scandal about WP Optimize and the alleged cheating on performance tests by turning off all JavaScript, and when it's under a testing user agent, I guess it's able to detect that and say, okay, it's GT metrics or it's page speed insights, and in that case, we're going to turn off all of your site's JavaScript to boost your score and make you feel good about yourself.
Right. Yeah. So that got quickly compared to the Volkswagen scandal a few years back, and there may have been another car manufacturer doing that when you hook the cars up to a emissions test. They turn the catalytic converter and filters on, and the rest of the time it's not on, and you get better performance on the road, and I don't know if it probably affects fuel economy, right?
Yeah, I think it was. I think it does, and then it also. I mean, the pollutants that came out of those cars on the road was way more than the legal limit.
Yeah, really bad. And so they had. It was a huge blow for the brand. A huge amount of distrust, and a blow for what everyone probably was a really solid brand, Volkswagen. The interesting, I remember this was when I was teaching writing last, there was a Cory Doctorow piece about this. Well, I brought it in as an example, and he was talking about we're dangerously going into a future where software can be so sophisticated, we don't really know what it's doing. And we don't even really know if the experience we're having is software mediated with there's an algorithm that is manipulating the semi-virtual experience we're having. So is your WordPress really, what's it doing? Who's it talking to? Are you, when you think you're doing tests, are you getting valid results? So to me, the trust issue is interesting. How has the response been from the company that has allegedly this code in it that is sort of a cheater code on optimization tests?
Yeah, so Sarah Gooding over at the WP Tavern put a article together that spoke with one of the lead developers of WP Optimize. And according to him, it was code that was forked over from another plugin. And I have to plead ignorance on the name of that plugin right now. But apparently they were in talks to maybe acquire this plugin. And at the time they decided to kind of merge some code in there to make it, to get ready for this big merger they were going to have, which ended up falling through. And then it ended up that they forgot the code was in there, the deal fell through, and they weren't quite sure why the code was still in there, or, kind of pleaded ignorance on it. But then Sarah also came up with an article the day after that kind of dug into it more, where I guess, the settings in this plugin are also a little bit obtuse. They're not completely clear on what they're doing. And so, there's it may be not an intentional thing, but at the same time, it still doesn't look very good.
Right. Yeah, it will be interesting to see how quickly and how well that clears up. I really care about the trust issues, and again, kind of like the piracy. If there's a widespread perception of we can't trust certain brands or hypothetically anyone in our ecosystem, that's a really bad consequence where so much trust is at the core of making open source work. But in a sense, it's open source working. Someone looked at the code.
Yeah, it's interesting that somebody was able to test that and found that what it was doing. And I mean, I don't know. I'm not a huge believer in these metrics anyway. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say they're made up, but they are kind of made up, and they don't always reflect, I don't think, the actual user experience.
Right.
But, I think any of these systems we bring out, somebody's going to find a way to cheat on them. Mm. And if you want to cheat on your performance test and get yourself, a little bit of an ego boost by saying, oh, I scored a 99, then so be it. You're the one that kind of has to live with it. But I think the plugin should at the very least be very clear about what they're doing and, what it's used for, what's good about it, and, here's how you shouldn't use it, which, they apparently did not do in this case.
Sure. Yeah, it does pose again to me like interesting questions about what could we do better as a community collectively to incentivize good behavior around performance, can there be kind of a general working standard or guidance on for plugin authors and for users, what we're looking for, what makes a what's the margin of a good performant plugin? Or just, I wish if you had details when you're down, you're in the .org repo, how many queries this has had to your page? What are the main dependencies here? Is there a quick way to get a heads up on that sometimes before you install something and then find out? all of the work being done on performance in core is really outstanding. And it's probably wrong to think about it as this is just a core, that's their problem. And this is a core thing. There's a huge plugin ecosystem where testing and standards could be a bit more rigorous than that. It sort of came up a bit with a proposal from Felix Arndt to look at when plugins are submitted test specifically for around performance and security a little bit more rigorously.
Where I live, we have Energy Star appliances, right? That means that they're certified as being efficient. You know, maybe there's a third party out there that can do that for plugins. Or I don't know if the WordPress folks would want to do that necessarily, but, we have...
Yeah.
You could have, like, some sort of certification system that says, hey, this plugin, performs well and is lean and is secure.
Yeah.
Of course, it's hard with software because there's no guarantees. Of course, your refrigerator could break the day after you bring it home, but it'd be interesting to see if somebody would ever come up with something like that, and how legitimate it could be.
Sure, yeah, that could be really useful. Maybe if it was a consensus or amongst hosts who, doing anything at scale, the performance. Matters in dollars, in significant dollars. We should think more about that. My next pick was the Gravity Acquires Gravity. Gravity Forms Gravity Flow and the services oriented.
Gravity Experts, I think.
Yeah, Gravity Experts. Okay. Not too familiar with those, but these are products and services in the Gravity Forms ecosystem that were owned and developed by one of Gravity's team members. So that's kind of an interesting story. I'm not aware of anyone else building an ecosystem, plug-in ecosystem around their product and working that closely where your employees are encouraged to develop a product or service related to it on their own. And then maybe it really takes off and bring it back into the parent company. Is that something unusual they've innovated with? It's, you're not being taken over by a big, a conglomerate, it's the family you're already in.
Yeah, I kind of think that's interesting, isn't it? I mean, you do a side project based on your everyday job, and then your boss essentially buys your product. It's like getting a really good bonus at work. You don't overly get that. So I kind of think it's cool, though. Gravity Forms, if you use it a lot, I mean, you'll notice there are tons of, official extensions, and they have a whole third-party directory now, and they go through and certify certain add-ons, third-party add-ons on their site that you can look through. So, kind of a neat thing. I mean, like Gravity Flow allows you to really do some complex things with what happens when a form gets submitted. You can tie it in with a bunch of third-party services or have it do different things on your site. So I think that just is such a natural fit for Gravity Forms. That, why wouldn't they want to sell something that does that? Right. And then Gravity Experts is a service that'll do a lot of customization. And as I mentioned to you off the air, I think that, they probably get a lot of customization requests through their support.
Sure.
And I've actually, just from my own experience, found their support to be awesome. They tend to, I mean, they don't mind sending you code snippets to use for mm-hmm. to achieve certain things. This steps it up a whole other level. You know, if you need customization services, well, we have that too. You know, why not keep that all in-house? And, you know, and maybe some of the customizations they create could end up being products on their own too. I think it would be a great way to kind of continue to grow their business.
Yeah, it's a really cool thing. And I wonder if anyone else is doing that. It occurs to me the advantage of it is that your own internal people know the product best, but there's not really, if they're already working for you, there's not, if you budget and allocate, like, hey, go and develop, you know, Blue Sky, even, you know, go and build add-ons for this and see what we come back with. It's a totally different thing. The incentives are not there as if you're building this as your own product. And if it's good enough, it's you got to get it to the point of maturity and quality where a competitor might actually want it or someone else might. And then I guess you're really establishing value in a clear and somewhat more neutral way while still totally being within this sub-economy, this gravity ecosystem. It's a smart way to own and share it collectively and not smother creativity and things like that. And yeah, I just don't, there's no other way to do something like that in the usual way where some outside company would absorb something else. And then maybe the quality, you know, this is stereotype or fear, the quality is going to drop off because it's a
sure. Total different. Yeah, usually we worry when plugins get acquired, but not in this case because it's, you know, the OG has it now. So we don't have to worry about, you know, them, you know, making it less quality or not supporting it well.
Yeah, it's a fantastic model. I think others should seriously take note. There's plenty of other ecosystem plugins that have this potential for that kind of collaboration. Good one. Okay, so yeah, what's your third pick?
So my third one is that WordPress.com this week announced that they're going to start offering $499 websites to anyone who wants one. It's supposed to be done within 4 business days. They'll give you a choice of themes, or they'll pick one for you, which is kind of interesting. Pick my theme. I kind of wonder, like, who the target is and what the strategy is here. Are they just trying to get you in the door so that you're kind of part of their WordPress.com ecosystem? Kind of a different strategy, I would think.
Yeah, it's interesting. I did write about this because it was, I love it when, you know, we have about a 10-year backlog, back issues, and, you know, things that have we can look back and see the history on. And I thought it was further back, but it was just probably about a year ago that WordPress.com did that for the first time, where they introduced a premium built with WordPress.com service, which this seems to be an add-on to that, the part of that same brand. But the initial one a year ago was not supposed to compete with freelancers. It was priced at around $5,000 as a baseline. That seems to have come down in their FAQ now. It's around $3,000. So there's still this premium layer. And I think that was supposed to use agencies and people within the ecosystem to do some of this work. I don't think anyone has dug into that or gotten numbers. We were very curious to see what might come out of that in terms of its success for WordPress.com and how many sites are being brought into it. We're very data poor about the economics and details of the market, and that also made me think too in this story that is that really competing or over the same piece of the pie, or is there so much there? It's not, not a threat to freelancers, small agencies, the way they might think. You can do very different things, and I can see why .com wants to, you know, continually expand at where it's easier to do that, where it's always had more market share at the lower end of the market. But when you're freelance, those are not necessarily the jobs you want.
So I actually made a joke online that I would rather like farm up stuff I don't want to do to them, because at that price point, I'm, you know, probably going to lose money. So yeah, if they want to take on that small stuff, that's cool with me. But
right.
It is kind of interesting to think that they're going after that market too. I mean,
right.
But yeah, I think you're right about them not wanting, about a lot of people on the lower end going to WordPress.com to start out, because it is kind of managed for them.
Right. And as they pivot more and more to presenting themselves as a managed WordPress host, with that market in mind, there are others already doing this. Why let competitors have a free run at this, doing the same thing? But .com now, you can install pretty much anything in the repo, I think. And there's a commercial ecosystem within there. You can buy Yoast and everything else right from within there. So as it grows, it's not the way to look at that is still ecosystem growth with opportunities for plugins and services and other things like that. But I also feel like we looked so much at the market share number, and where it's biggest is the top 10 million plus active sites with WordPress installed. So it's the bigger universe, and you assume that these are people's personal blogs and so on, but because they're not, it's just by traffic, you know, they're not in the top 10,000. But when I did a lot more freelancing, a lot of the clients I had that were good would be established nonprofits, local, even governmental things, people with significant budgets, but their traffic is, they don't care about it, number one, that much necessarily. They're not doing much content marketing. Maybe they have a newsletter. They're speaking to a very specific audience that may be numbered in the hundreds or the thousands. They're doing a lot on social. So they would be considered in this low end of the market, but that's but by assessing their site by traffic, but it's not that's completely a misnomer. Then they would have no use for a hired site builder. Even they need an agency or someone with the capacity to do support, the hosting, and a rather much more elaborate feature set. So that market is always there. I think people forget that, and you're not going to be killed off by the $500 4-day service.
No, and I mean, if they've talked about, you know, wanting to compete with some of these proprietary systems like Wix, and I think that's kind of the same market. I mean, people that want to not spend a ton of money, and maybe in this case they don't even really want to build it themselves, they just want something up there, and maybe as they grow they go to something bigger, but to start out, you know, it's not a huge investment. And, you know, those are the folks that I think aren't necessarily attracted to freelancers, not just because of budget, but because, you know, somebody wants to try a blog, somebody wants to start their small business, and with no guarantee of how long that's going to last. You know, is that client going to still be there for you in 2 years? And if they are, you know, what's the value? Are you getting so many support requests that you can't necessarily deal with it? Mm-hmm. So in that way, I don't think this is a bad thing to kind of tie them all into that one service. Mm-hmm. It might be, you know, something more beneficial for them, that where they can even leave at any time they want to. I mean, if the business goes belly up, you know, it's not as tangled and messy as it might be getting away from an agency or a freelancer even.
Yeah, and I'd much rather have them on .com or anything in the WordPress ecosystem than Wix, which I still, man, I've had to use it again recently for a local nonprofit I'm helping out, and man, I don't like Wix. It's, and I'm just thinking, like, if as this organization grows and what its needs are, it needs open source, it needs WordPress, it needs data security. There are things that maybe they're not in a position to pay for, but they're at this point, but their success will get them into that at some point. And there, it, as a running your own business, that's a kind of, you can only do that. You know, you can ask those questions and do the discovery and form the relationship and say, look, these are the needs you really have, and what's really the best product or thing here. And sometimes that leads to long, good relationships with a decent paying client who may get a lot bigger in that budget at least. So
Absolutely.
yeah. All right. Well, that all kind of ties in kind of nicely to the last thing, kind of our topic we want to open up for kind of long-term discussion and get more people engaged with. Kind of a big central one for post status. And I think everyone working in this space is professionalism. And what does it mean to be a WordPress professional? We say we're the post status is the community for WordPress professionals. And that's an interesting phrase that's really kind of come into, I would say, in the last 5 to 10 years, widespread use in our community. And what does that mean to you, as an individual, as a and within the community and the business ecosystem, to be a WordPress professional and professionalism in general?
I mean, I think, WordPress Professional is kind of interesting because it started out as a small blogging platform, right? And people were using it as more of a hobbyist thing. And then all of a sudden, the theme and plugin markets kind of exploded and we started using it as a full-blown CMS and, for all sorts of projects from, the little tiny startups to enterprise. So I think the professionalism part of it is, that there's a lot of traditional parts to professionalism, like I think being polite and honest and, hardworking and all those things come to mind. But then, it also meets kind of this WordPress way that's a little bit more relaxed. I think that reflects on Matt Mullenweg a little bit. He's not always, the old-fashioned stuffed shirt CEO that, gets up there and makes, grand pronouncements necessarily. But it also, I think, reflects on, the WordCamp culture of just kind of going, come as you are. But generally, being kind to one another, being open to discussion, doesn't always work out that way. But I think it's an interesting way to think about WordPress these days. I mean, because a lot of us make a living with it, either full time or at least part of the time. And the ground rules that applied for other sorts of businesses over the years don't necessarily, apply here. It's a little bit different kind of ecosystem, I think.
Yeah, it definitely is. I think people hear that word, and there's sort of the larger corporate stereotype of, well, there's good thing, there's good basic definitions of, you show up every day, you do the work every day, no matter what, the basics of it. But there's also the kind of the negative connotations of professionals in a more corporate scaled up space that's kind of lost the human and individual element, the personal element, and doesn't have this kind of big family community of relations necessarily. And I mentioned to you a friend, Sarah Schulman, who's got a book I think that touches this. She runs a They do a lot with WordPress, but it's a social design agency. They're anthropologists and ethnographers who try to solve largely institutional social problems in municipal governments and lend advice on dealing with things like homelessness and why do helping institutions often, they're too bloodless and faceless and impersonal to help very real individual human problems. And I got to know her and their people last year. I'll probably do it again. We're working with kind of post-COVID recovery projects our city is funding. We just listened to people's stories and got them to talk about well-being and what that means for them. And it's a very unusual kind of woolly, even kind of hippie-ish weird thing that you don't usually associate with government bureaucracies doing something like that. Really individuals listening to each other and caring something about the experience and totality of each other's lives. That might be good for good for people
we could use more of that. Absolutely.
Yeah. And we were talking about professionalism specifically after this, and she said, yes, the dysfunctional form of that we try to overcome is the sense that you've got to create a mask of invulnerability. And I think that there's coinciding and even integral to WordPress professionals and professionalism is that you can be known as a person who has a full life and all these other things going on. And we talk about that, and there's not as much of this kind of informal or private segregation from the business side, especially maybe on those who've been in it a long time or contributors and small businesses and so on. And that's a really healthy thing for people, and it translates to a healthy community and I think a healthy business ecosystem, because it takes the edge off of straight hard competition, the tendency towards paranoia and reaction and meanness, especially on remote and internet stuff. I feel like that's a big part of it. And when we, Michelle Frechette featured member spotlight for the week, and well known to many, many people, Jonathan Bossinger, who's now at Automatic as working on training, which is a kind of newer and big thing there, impacting the community and doing code instruction. And he said some really good things that I think define him and others as a good model of what professionalism is. And there's power to change lives and people finding their footing in the community and in work here. What else was in here? It's just a very personal flavor to it. We're not doing kind of faceless roles in cubicles here. A lot of people really value that freedom.
Yeah, I mean, you can see it as, we're not afraid to let our human side show, which I think is like really refreshing. I mean, if you look at a lot of the more traditional corporations out there, I mean, when do you see their leadership out there, like just being humans? And of course, it's at a much greater scale. But even with Corey Miller, talking about the struggles that he's had, and he's a very successful person, and he and his family have done a lot in WordPress, but he's still not afraid to show some vulnerability. I think that's so important. I mean, you don't feel like you have to put up a facade. That's one thing I've always kind of felt comfortable with in this community, is that if I'm having a bad day, I can say that on Twitter, and while still being thankful for what I have, I can still say, not been a good day. I haven't done well. Not every industry really accepts that and would, applaud that, but I think ours generally does, and I think that's something we should not take for granted.
Yeah, I really value that too, and agree with that. I think it, Jonathan, and you and I have probably been around the same period of time, going back 20 years, so we're we're in the Generation X category, where yeah, we might have slacker tendencies, but I think it was still younger people and down to my kids' ages who are really more comfortable with not separating who they are in their private lives and even messy, even, you know, politics and feelings about a variety of things that we don't, you don't have to pretend that doesn't exist. It can be a really fine line. You don't, there's oversharing, there's
yeah.
Stuff. It has to balance out. But yeah, somehow when we're healthy as a community, it manages to work out. And Jonathan mentioned post-status as being a place that serves that by not just, you can go there for answers and social kind of hanging out and fun things and there's always plenty of good humor, but he also mentioned having bigger philosophical discussions around business, open source, and everything WordPress related in a respectful and inclusive way. And yeah, there's no way to define, there's no recipe for that, but we know it when we see it. And that being able to maintain a level of trust that comes from being real people to each other who care to know something and share things about each other. And you know, the role that WordCamps play in that, and meetups for sure. Mentoring becoming more of a thing that we talk about and support. It allows the hard stuff, the bad feelings, conflicts, competition, in theory, and I think we've seen this happen. People can work it out. It takes the edge off of that and becomes a way where, I don't know, pressure valve. Yeah, it definitely performs a healthy service to a way to check in and maybe help each other maintain a healthy community and business culture that is professional in our own way, kind of all the normal ways you'd think about showing up, getting stuff done, being reliable, and the best you can every day, but also showing up as a real person who values trust and kindness and respect between each other. And yeah, the more of that the better. But do you have any other thoughts on that topic, or where that could go? Hoping to pull more people into to discuss it, since it seems like one of those kind of precious commodities that, you know, it's actually not an economic thing. You can't buy it.
No, and I think it's good for your own health, for the health of the community, and you know, when you can see others, whether you agree with them or not, as a person, as opposed to, you know, some distant object that you're at odds with, or you want to or you're competing against, it does take that edge off a little bit. It lets you just kind of take a deep breath, and you know, I mean, we see arguments just like in any other community, but what I don't see is them becoming to the point where at least in public, where, you know, it's just incredibly toxic. And usually if things do go bad, there's always somebody else to come in and say, hey, wait a minute, let's, you know, take a deep breath, which is just, I think, refreshing. I wish, and I won't go into it too far, but I wish we had, you know, political leadership that could do the same thing. We had like, you know, a referee that could come in and voluntarily say, hey, you guys don't agree, but that's okay.
It's tough. Yeah. And it's an ideal we'll never be perfect at. And yeah, to take one example, I'm thinking about writing about, you know, one of the, a friend in a country where democracy has been threatened and on the wane in a while. And that's very widespread. We're seeing a lot of difficult times for some of the key values in the project, in the community, and that in our own lives. And actually was think, jailed and suppressed for things he was blogging of a political nature on his WordPress blog in his country. And which you can imagine doesn't a number on you psychologically and socially. And then, of course, like anyone else, especially your plugin or theme author or something like that, you run into what feels like unfairness at some point in your work life, in the ecosystem of how decisions get made, how things are handled. And I feel for people sometimes when we're not at our best, or even when things are perfectly fine, it's not, everything is not going to go your way all the time. And it can feel oppressive, or like people are not living up to levels of transparency or kindness as they should. And I try to think, yeah, you know, there's people coming from a lot of different contexts where you want to be sensitive to all that, but there's also a need to kind of bear up with, we're not always at our best. We're not, everything is not consistent the way we think it should be. But that means try harder. Don't give up on it. It's hard for a reason. It's not something you can just take for granted. I wish there was more of it.
Well said.
Well, I look forward to clicking publish on the piece you've written for us that touches some of these things too, in the writing space that we both occupy, and the value that being able to write and talk well and respectfully and in an informed way about things going on in WordPress is really important. And I'm thankful for your steady part in it. I've, you know, read you for a long time. This is, I think, the first time we've connected face to face. And I'm glad you're here and that you're there doing what you do.
Thank you. It's been awesome being here with you. And you know, I've been a post status member for several years now, and you know, I've just gotten so much out of it, just the connections and just, as you said, the philosophical discussions that go on. And it's a little bit of everything, and I think it's a great representation of the community as a whole.
Yeah, well, it's the membership who makes it. It's the community that shows up and that we keep carrying each other along and bringing in new people. It's great, but no one owns it. No one can take full credit for it. We're glad to have you here. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Post Status Excerpt, a podcast from Post Status, the community for WordPress professionals. Check us out at poststatus.com. Sign up for our free weekly newsletter, or become a member and join Post Status Slack. We have membership plans for solo professionals, agency owners, product founders, and business partners who share and support our mission of investing in the open web by growing the WordPress ecosystem. Post Status is a great place to give and grow together as WordPress professionals in the open source commons that is the WordPress project. Come for the news, analysis, deep dives, and podcasts, but stay for the fun and the community. PostStatus.com.